You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
One of the most controversial issues that we've been closely following here on the program for all of the months of the pandemic and the lockdown has been the health care workers community trying to get authorities to accept that COVID-19 is airborne and aerosolized. Now, as you know, there's international commentary around that now, and they want to get the protection they need to look after them so they don't get infected. Yesterday, I spoke to the Victorian Health Minister, Martin Foley, and I asked him about whether the Victorian government was now starting to recognize the airborne spread of COVID-19 and the need for different protection measures in hospitals and other health care worker settings.
We already have the highest standards in Australia when it comes to PPE and respiratory protection. If we can take those standards to an even higher level in the very near future and make suitable announcements, we will.
And from the calls that I've made, I understand there will be some important announcements made very soon from the state government about how they're switching the recognition of how COVID-19 can be transmitted and the care that needs to be taken of healthcare workers, which is really good news. I mentioned yesterday a really brilliant graphic display of the risks in various settings of COVID-19 and how this display was being adopted by many countries and taken up as their way of getting out of lockdown. It's been put together by Dr. Zeshan Kureshi and others from colleges there at Oxford University. And it's a really interesting bit of graphic information that I urge you to go to my social media posts and you can see it there. We'll also put it on the ABC Melbourne social media post. And it explains to you why some settings are opening up but others aren't. So we thought we'd get hold of him. Dr. Zeshan Kureshi, good morning and good evening, your time over there in the UK. That chart of risk that you put together, can it be used as a basis for coming out of lockdown?
This has been the single most engaging and influential piece of work I've ever been involved in. The chart that we produced has been translated into over 38 languages. It's been the British Medical Journal's highest ever impact article in social media. It's been used in terms of school policies. We've also been told that it's been involved in certain government briefings. The reality is people are crying out for a more nuanced model where we don't look at social distancing or mask in isolation, that we put everything together so that we are absolutely sure that where we can open up the economy and increase people's liberty, we do it, and where the risk is really high, that we stay on top of the virus at the same time. That's the only way for us to get out of this challenge, and I believe that this model is one that's very powerful as part of that journey.
It's astonishing the amazing take-up that you've had and the powerful effect that that's had. I guess because people can see it clearly and graphically and understand what it means. But it does also mean that when you have that nuanced approach and that case-by-case approach in the way that you've done it in that graphic, it means that some parts of the economy bear the brunt longer than others. Some parts of our society just can't open up or won't open up for a while others can. Do we just need to accept the unfairness of that?
I think there's two separate questions. One is what needs to be done in terms of getting the virus under control, keeping people healthy and broadly allowing the economy to open up in the long term. And ultimately, we have to accept that that's going to have a short-term harm over certain industries. The other element, which is a government question, is how do we compensate those people that are taking temporary hits, and how do we allow those industries to flourish more in the future? In the UK, we have had a very strange situation whereby in August, we're all financial incentivized to eat out to help out and have 50% off all meals. And then in October, we're then told we have to all go back home and not go to restaurants and go out as much in other places. We can't swing from one extreme to the other. Again, it takes careful consideration, and it may just be the case that greater financial support for those struggling has to be put in place where they're not able to work in order to protect the economy.
Have we taken too long to recognise that the virus is airborne, that it's aerosolized simply by, you know, breathing, speaking, exhaling, singing, sneezing and the like? Has that taken too long for us to recognize and for us to shift our responses to that accordingly?
Challenging, because this has been a new virus that we've had to respond to very quickly. But the reality is that scientists like myself and other groups have been talking about the aerosolized nature of coronavirus for a long time. And the reality is that countries that locked down early and that had very strict restrictions, they're the ones that not only have had less deaths and less illness, but have also had the smallest hits to their economy. We have to make sure that if there is a second wave, as there is emerging across Europe and other parts of the world, that we don't make the same mistakes as before, and we make sure we minimise coronavirus risk in all settings so that we can get it under control and not risk the long-lasting damage both to people's lives and to the economy.
And how do we do that? Because we're emerging from a big second wave here in Melbourne, and we seem to have been very successful in really smashing that curve, but through a very harsh lockdown. Very little, if anything at all, has been opened for quite a number of weeks. So how do you do that when we have, you know, for example, and understandably, the hospitality sector, restaurants and cafes and the like, clamouring to be allowed to reopen, to have dining indoors? They're saying that they can do it safely. What does the science tell us?
The reality is that we can't treat all schools the same or restaurants the same. We have to look at a multiplicity of factors. Even saying that outdoor environments will be safer than indoor environments isn't a given. If you're outdoors in a crowded environment for a prolonged period of time not wearing a face mask, that's far worse than being indoors but well ventilated, wearing a mask and silent. We have to make sure that we have a nuanced model applied to each individual setting, but also enforceability of those rules. And one of the heartbreaking things about being in the UK is, you know, 2 metre distancing has been advertised very clearly. Curfews of 9 p.m, 10 p.m. have been advertised, but we see all over our TV screens images of them rules being completely flaunted. We have to have the right rules and then backed up with enforcement. Otherwise, it will just be lockdown after lockdown after lockdown, with the loss of life and the damage to the economy associated with it.
In healthcare worker settings, this is crucial as well, and there's been a big debate here in Australia about that, about what kind of protective situation they need to be in, given that they're working in the most exposed place. How elevated a level do you need to set in terms of protection in hospitals and for healthcare workers?
Well, healthcare workers are putting themselves at huge risk by exposing themselves to the sickest patients that through aerosol-generating procedures and through just being symptomatic are shedding huge amounts of coronavirus. We need to make absolutely every precaution with regard to testing, with regard to gowning, with regard to masks, to ensure that their risk is minimised. But equally, we have to acknowledge the humanity of hospital situations. And one of the really sad things that's happened in the UK is we have situations where huge numbers of people are congregating in bars, but women are giving birth alone because none of their family are allowed to be around during the majority of their stay in hospital. So it isn't just about the healthcare workers. We have to remember that people are going to hospital in a very vulnerable space and in very important life-defining moments, and those things have to be balanced out.
Dr. Zehan Qureshi, really interesting talking to you this morning, and thanks for putting together and sharing that chart. It really is incredibly instructive. Thanks so much, and take care to everyone there in the UK.
Thank you so much.